Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Well, it's not too often I get a chance to interview a lawyer. And you know what makes him particularly nervous is most lawyers don't ask a question until they know what the answer is. He has no idea what questions I'm going to put. And over there laughing at me right now is a fellow I've known for years by the name of Jay Bender, which many people in Rock Hill do not know. But he's got a connection with this community that goes back a long, 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 long time. And I thought it was time for a refresher course. So I said, Jay, how about coming to Rock Hill and sitting down and talk with me? And he said, okay, I'll do it. And here he is.
Happy to do it.
So tell everybody a little bit of, I want the small Cliff Notes summary of you.
Well, Gilbert Blue, who was longtime chief of the Catawba, said every time I mentioned the land claim, I started with the Treaty of 1760. I won't go that far back. I am a lawyer. I'm also a retired media law professor from the University of South Carolina. In 1975... the Native American Rights Fund reached out to Jean Toll, who was a partner in my law firm, to see if she would be interested in being local counsel for a case involving a claim related to a breach of a treaty between the tribe and governments going back to the 1700s. In 1840, the state had dispossessed the tribe from its traditional reservation and offered to get them a new reservation in 1840 in Haywood County, North Carolina. Well, Haywood County, North Carolina is where Andrew Jackson had removed all of the Cherokees starting in 1838, so there was no way there was going to be a relocated Catawba reservation. It ended up the Catawbas had a 630-acre reservation right in the middle of its 144,000 acre treaty reservation. And since South Carolina is South Carolina, it did not get Congress to approve the 1840 treaty. So that meant it was void, and our lawsuit against everybody who was on the 144,000 acres had standing, as they say. And we filed the lawsuit.
And when was that? 1980s?
It was sometime in the early 80s. We started working on it in 1975. And I'm always amazed when I come up to Rock Hill and see the growth. And the growth was impeded for years by the threat and then the existence of this lawsuit.
Now, let me tell everybody, because I was here when that lawsuit was filed, and I can't remember, it was 86, 85, whatever it was. And they had a, I guess it was a press conference over in the courtroom to actually tell everybody this is what was happening. And I sat down in my chair, and I picked up this big thing. I call it the complaint, but you call it something else?
Well, it's the summons and complaint. Yeah. Summons is the document that starts a lawsuit.
Okay. Anyway, this thing weighed about 10 pounds. I swear it's 10 pounds. And it had to be at least 12 to 18 inches thick. And I sat there and I thumbed through this. Everybody, including me, was being sued in York County because of this land claim. So how did you determine who was on that list? How did you do that?
It was very interesting. A surveyor named Gene Dinkins in Columbia worked out the problem for us. We knew the boundaries of the treaty reservation, 144,000 acres. So we took that treaty and the boundaries and gave it to Gene and said, can you superimpose this on the contemporary tax maps in Lancaster, Chester, and York counties? And he did. And with that transposition, we were able to identify 42,000 people who were on parcels that had been within the tribe's treaty reservation.
42,000 names were in that.
That's right. And that's why it was so thick. And you did just exactly what everybody I showed the summons and complaint to did. And they thumbed through it to see if they were a defendant. And, of course, most of them were.
Now, you told a funny story to me off air. Then when you went and filed this thing with the clerk, they had dollar signs going up in their face.
In South Carolina, when you initiate a suit against real property, you file a document known as a lis pendens, which means this property is subject to lawsuit. And the state statute on that filing says clerks get $5 for a filing of a lis pendens. So I would walk into a clerk of court's office and hand them this document with all these defendants, and the dollar signs would start rolling around in their eyes. And then I explained, no, it's one lis pendens. It's not 42,000 lis pendens. It's one, and you need to cross-reference it to every defendant in here.
Oh, my God.
And you get $5 for it.
Yeah.
I was very popular.
I bet you were very popular. Well, you know, this lawsuit tied up everything here in York County, and I can't speak to Lancaster County and Chester County, but you couldn't do anything. You couldn't do anything while this lawsuit was there.
The title insurance companies for years had written around the Catawba claim, but they always included in their title letters that the property might be subject to a claim by the Catawba Indian tribe, which meant that if the tribe were successful, it would have a claim against your property that would not be insured.
Huh. So therefore, they're not going to issue the title insurance.
Well, they issued it with that exception.
Yeah, but boy, if there was a claim, they would go broke.
I asked a lawyer in Rock Hill why it was that not every lawyer in Rock Hill in their title searches disclosed the existence of the Catawba claim. Because you have to disclose impediments to the title. And he told me, if you guys are right, and you get all this property back, I don't own anything anyway, so they can't come after me. I thought that was a reasonable approach.
So while this is going through the process of a hearing and what have you, efforts to resolve this, and I'm sorry people can't, the personalities that were here that made this possible, the current residents of this community don't know. John Spratt.
If it hadn't have been for John Spratt, we wouldn't have gotten it done. And ironically, one of John's predecessors was one of the first Europeans to intrude into the claim area that had been reserved exclusively for the Catawbas. But John was an absolutely brilliant lawyer and member of Congress. We had a hearing in Congress on this bill, on the settlement legislation, and John came in and without a note recited book, chapter, and verse, the history of the Catawbas in South Carolina from the time of European invasion on. It was fantastic. Fritz Hollings was quite helpful. We had, and on the tribe side, Gilbert Blue, the longtime chief who I had mentioned previously, Evans Buck George was on the executive committee, Carson Blue was on the executive committee, and then there were others over the years, and they were all very much interested in getting a resolution while at the same time not completely upending the lives of the people in the claim area.
Now, the number that everybody agreed to was $50 million.
That's correct.
How was that number derived? It was somebody try to take 42,000 pieces of property and, well, say that's what it's worth?
I think in reality, the way it was arrived at is what would be paid by the federal government and by the state of South Carolina to get it resolved, and an amount that the tribe's executive committee and then the tribe itself would accept. and it was a negotiation. It went on for years. We ended up going through a very complex, detailed negotiation that ended around midnight in the old courtroom in the old federal courthouse in Rock Hill.
Known as the Geddes Center now.
John Spratt's office was upstairs there. Uh-huh. We would meet in the courtroom, both sides, and try to hammer out points. And John was an early adopter of computers. And he would take notes, we would take notes. He'd go upstairs to his office and type out each provision of the agreement on his computer and then bring it down and pass it around. And we would say, yes or no, that's not what we agreed to. And we were able to hammer it out. Had we not had John Spratt, had we not had computers, I don't think the thing would have been settled ever.
Well, you also have to give credit to people like yourself who could see the wisdom of getting this thing resolved versus going through a court case that would have been just absolutely horrendous.
Well, we went to the Supreme Court once, went to the Fourth Circuit, as they say, en banc, with all of the judges who were not recused twice, and the district court repeatedly, and all the South Carolina judges were recused, and part of that was they didn't want to touch that tar baby, but they also had some conflicts. So a judge was brought in from Erie, Pennsylvania. His name was Joseph P. Wilson. He had been on the federal bench since the Eisenhower administration. He was Dwight Eisenhower's third judicial nominee. And he came down and he made it quite clear the first hearing we had that he did not like Indians and he did not like lawyers for Indians.
Oh, boy.
But over time, for some reason, he decided he liked me. And he would call me, not to talk about the case, but just talk about stuff. He played football for the University of Pennsylvania. The water boy for the football team was William Brennan, who went on to the U.S. Supreme Court. Wilson told me, and I haven't checked it, that he played against Red Grange. So that gives you some idea how old this guy was. But fortunately, we were able ultimately to bypass him and get a settlement through Congress and through the South Carolina General Assembly. And and there was not $50 million in cash handed over to the tribe. There was a series of trust funds created for land, for education, for health care, and a small portion was distributed per capita to tribal members. You and I talked off the air about electric co-ops needing to give gifts to get co-op members to come vote. Well, if we hadn't had some small cash stipend for tribal members, it would have been very difficult to get acceptance of the settlement through the tribe, because it was ultimately the tribe that had to approve it.
Well, you anticipate my next question. You reach a settlement, but it has to be approved by the Catawba Indian Nation.
That's correct.
And pulling all those, and it's not wasn't a great number of people, but pulling them together to vote on this, obviously a lot of encouragement was needed, not only from the tribe, but from those working for the tribe.
There was a variety of perspectives in the negotiations and in the tribal meetings to approve the settlement. There were people who wanted cash only. There were people who said, hell no, we want the land back. And Gilbert Blue was the most, he was the best politician I have ever met in my life. I always told John Spratt that he was fortunate that Gilbert wanted to be an Indian chief and not a member of Congress, because we would walk into a tribal meeting and there would have been rumors of revolt and all sorts of turmoil, and Gilbert would stand up and say a few words and the waters would be calmed down and business would be conducted. So he just had a way, and he was the prime mover in getting the tribe members to agree.
So once it was agreed to, then all those who were participating in this, financially or with land or whatever, did what they had to do, and it was done.
That was right. It was done. The suit was dismissed. It cleared the title to all this property in the claim area, which is why the explosion and development, it was no longer impeded by this land claim. And then the tribe set out transitioning from a nonprofit South Carolina corporation to a sovereign government with authority and resources.
Right.
And it was not an easy process for the tribe, but it has worked through it.
Now, did you, once this was done with, did you stay on with the Catawba Indian Nation to help them get their government set up and functioning?
For better or worse, I continued to represent the tribe until I went to teach full-time at the university in 2006.
Wow.
So I was involved with Catawba from 1975 through 2006.
So you went through all of the high-stakes bingo versus the state lottery,
Yes. And part of the settlement, encouraged by Crawford Clarkson, who was the state's chief negotiator and who deserves credit along with Gilbert and John Spratt. Crawford was the head of the state tax commission at the time, and he encouraged Carol Campbell, who was then the governor, to get on board with a settlement because Crawford recognized the contingent liability the state faced if this thing went on. And he wanted to give the tribe a source of economic development so that it could thrive. He also wanted to get rid of the shady bingo operators in the state, the fake charity bingo operators. And he proposed to give the tribe a high-stakes, unique bingo operation. And it worked until the shady bingo operators, with their legislative influence, kept narrowing the gap, and then the state killed bingo by getting in the gambling business itself. We tried to get a satellite bingo facility in Horry County.
Right.
The Horry County politicians said, we're not going to allow any Indians in here to do this. We tried to get a bingo operation that would have resembled a casino at the intersection of I-95 and I-26 at Santee. All of the congressional delegation signed off on it. All of the local government officials signed off on it. By this time, Carol Campbell was gone and Mark Sanford was the governor.
And that was that.
I know we're on the air, so I will not give you my frank assessment of Mark Sanford, but he told me to my face that he was opposed to the tribe having this bingo facility in Santee on moral grounds. Now, this is a guy who took state money to fly to Argentina to have an extramarital affair. So Marky Mark Sanford talking about morality is absurd. But he got his friend John Ensign, who was in the Senate, to kill the federal legislation that would have allowed that land to be taken in trust down there and the facility to be built. The state of South Carolina has a racist past that continues today with respect to anybody who is not white and Christian, frankly. That's why the Catawba gaming facility now is in North Carolina, because South Carolina was inhospitable to it. And at every step of the way since settlement, the state has sought to diminish the authority of the tribe. York County has sought to diminish the authority of the tribe, and the city of Rock Hill reneged on an agreement to provide water at a set price to the tribe's housing development. Now, I find it interesting that the state of South Carolina has no interest in working with its indigenous population, but it's happy to have a car manufacturer from China in Charleston It has a German car manufacturer in Spartanburg. Deutsche Bank, which is the largest single shareholder of Mercedes, contacted the tribe and said, we understand if we were to build a car plant on Indian land, we could get favorable tax treatment and we could get favorable loan arrangements. And the tribe looked at it, and that turned out to be true. We figured Deutsche Bank knew what it was talking about. It's a huge international bank. So we identified a piece of property off of Highway 9, had rail siding, had internet access, and the Mercedes people were very much interested in it. So Buck George, who was then the assistant chief, and I went to the state development board at the time, it's now the Commerce Department, and we laid out this proposal. The Commerce Department position was that Carol Campbell had promised the next car plant in South Carolina to Charleston. So if you drive I-20 west over toward Birmingham, you will see a very large Mercedes plant. It's in Alabama because the state of South Carolina did not want to deal with an Indian tribe to get that development here in South Carolina.
And that site, I think, is the site where GT Tire is now located, right there on Highway 9 in Richburg?
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, could be.
I don't know which side of the,
Whatever.
It's been a long time since I was down there.
We have to take our long overdue mid-program break. Remind everybody that you're listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. And you can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Okay, Jay Bender, here's what we do. At Substation 2, it's called Fresh Subs and Salads. We do it 6 days a week because I can't get the owner to open up a seventh day. The way we do it is what brings everybody out there in here to get it. At the count of three, we're going to recite it so everybody knows. One, two, three.
Slice. Garden.
Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Hey, Manning, I hear the gyros are back at Substation 2.
That's right, Alex, and they are great. They're made to order, served hot on warm, soft pita bread with creamy tzatziki sauce, onion, and tomato. And I can't wait to get one.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Don't resign your retirement plan to some rule of thumb. Your own personal retirement is unique to you and your family. Give our common sense investing approach a shot. Anderson Griggs Investments, a genuine money manager right here in Rock Hill. 324-5044 or online at AndersonGriggs.com.
If your primary care physician has recommended surgery for a medical condition and non-invasive medical treatments are not an option, you may want to talk to your surgeon about new, less invasive surgical techniques. At Piedmont Medical Center, we use Da Vinci Robotic Surgery, a robot-assisted system controlled by a surgeon designed to allow for greater surgical precision during many general GYN and urology procedures that potentially offers you a quicker recovery. Learn more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Soup, here it is. Soup, here it is. Fight those cold weather chills with a cup of hot soup at Substation 2. We serve a rotating selection of flavors and never know what we feel like fixing, but it's all delicious. Soup and sandwich, what a great combo at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winter.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, a very interesting discussion with a guy by the name of Jay Bender, who was intimately involved with everything involving the Catawba Indian Nation from the time of the land claim back in the early 80s up until really just recently. Is that about right?
Well, 2006.
That's recently.
Well, in the great, you know, if you look at the history of the tribes, that was certainly recently.
All right, so we are where we are. The Catawbas were never able to set up their gaming operations here in South Carolina. And as you pointed out, they're now in North Carolina. They worked out something with Cleveland County up there. They got quite a complex that's coming out of the ground. They have mobile units right now. They've got 500 or 1,000 electronic machines up there, and you can go crazy sitting there and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. But they're going to build, they are building a huge complex up there, hotel, and they'll have the whole gaming structure. And they managed to work out an arrangement with those people in Cleveland County, which is interesting because the Cherokees up there in the mountains fought it.
Of course.
They don't want that commerce being cut off at Exit 5 versus having to go all the way up there to the mountains. Doesn't surprise you, does it?
No. We could have had that same facility in South Carolina, but for Mark Sanford. And he killed the opportunity to have that facility with lots of jobs, lots of tourists stopping, lots of tax revenue. And we had a proposal that would have provided resources back to the communities. And he killed it. And enlisted a senator from Nevada whose family was in the casino business. So they didn't want any more casinos either. Ironically, that senator ended up having to pay several hundred thousand dollars to his chief of staff because the senator was having an affair with the wife of the chief of staff. So that's morality from those two clowns. But that could have been in South Carolina. Now, you would ask me off the air, where does the money come from? There are...
And this is the money to build what's being built.
To build the facilities. Right. There are businesses that invest in those sorts of operations. Now, tribal casinos are not well known in South Carolina. One's, of course, known in North Carolina. If you go out west, there are many tribal casinos. I joke that the natives are winning the country back one hand at a time. But a lot of those casinos out there have magnificent hotels. They attract tourists, they attract people for shows, and I think that's what the tribe has in mind up here in North Carolina.
So, last question. Since you have been with the Catawbas for so long, now all this seems to be settled down and they're getting operational. What message would you want to give to those who are elected in local positions here in our community as far as relationships that they may want to build with the Catawbas?
I think it would be very helpful to the tribe and to local communities to have a cooperative agreement on many issues. Now, in the settlement, we had a provision that there could be cross-deputization of sheriff's deputies. And when Bruce Bryant was the sheriff of York County, we had such an arrangement. I don't know if it still exists, but it would be possible. There are many other areas where I think the tribe and local governments could work together if the local governments weren't opposed to the tribe.
Jay Bender, thank you for coming up here. Will you come again so we can talk about the Broadcasters Association?
Certainly, anytime.
All right, Jay Bender is his name. He is a cornucopia of information here today. Thank you for being with us, and that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax You with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. All right, one more time for the masses outside that should be inside. What is it we do here at Substation 2? You know this. Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, knuckleheads here. Okay, here we go. At the count of three, one, two, three.
Slice. Garden.
Not bad. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on your radio tomorrow. Bye.